We can count us in, maybe.
Ready?
Welcome to the Iditapod, a podcast about, what else? The Iditarod, a production of Alaska Public Media and KNOM Radio in Nome. I'm your host, Josh Edge. Now, before we jump into today's episode, here's a quick word from our sponsor.
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, celebrating 40 years of fueling the 49th state, is proud to support Iditarod coverage on Alaska Public Media.
Today is the official restart of the 2017 Iditarod. Once teams leave the starting line in Fairbanks, mushers will start their race toward that burled arch in Nome. Remember, we are in the midst of our daily episodes, so from now until the end of the race, we'll be cranking these out each morning until the race is done. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher, or listen on alaskapublic.org. Both of our trail reporters are here in the studio with me today. Across from me is Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes.
Good day, Josh.
And we've also got Ben Matheson from KNOM Radio in Nome.
Hey, guys.
Now, we did record this episode over the weekend before Zach and Ben left for Fairbanks, so all three of us could be in the studio. But after today, whenever we hear from them, it will be from somewhere along the Thousand Mile Trail. Today, we are here to talk about the Iditarod's restart in Fairbanks. We've talked about it in past episodes, so I would imagine that most of you listening to us are aware the restart was moved from Willow to Fairbanks this year. But if you are just joining us or are new to the Iditarod, a quick recap probably wouldn't hurt. Ben, why don't you give us a quick overview of what the restart is, why it's in Fairbanks this year, and how it's different from the ceremonial start in Anchorage.
The restart's in Fairbanks this year because over the course of this early winter, there was not enough snow in some very, very important parts of the Alaska Range. Near Rainy Pass, where there's technical driving at the Happy River Steps in the Dalzell Gorge, there just wasn't enough snow for the Iditarod to safely make it over that part of the trail. They made that call back in February, as they have to do to coordinate the logistics for a race like this. And this comes after 2014 was a very low snow year, and a handful of mushers got hurt. A lot of mushers scratched over very hazardous trail conditions in that particular year. In Fairbanks, we'll have each of the 72 teams depart 2 minutes apart from Pike's Landing, making their way to the Chena River, heading out of town, getting on the Tanana River, on the way to the first checkpoint in Nenana. Compared to the ceremonial start, the official restart is all business. There's still folks out there having fun, but the mushers are there with the actual 16 dogs that they plan to race to Nome. They have the actual sleds that they're going to use. They're wearing their sleds are packed perfectly for this trail, and it's really what these mushers have been training all year to do, and it's all business as they get on the trail.
I hope that's the banner that's hanging, you know, sponsored by the Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce, is like, welcome to Fairbanks, all business.
So aside from the different starting location in the much, much, much colder Fairbanks than the traditional restart in Willow, Zach...
Spoken like a true Anchorage boy.
Oh, absolutely. It hit 0 degrees today, and I thought I might actually die. Anyways, Zach, what can you tell us about how the conditions differ and what the weather's going to look like for the teams as they make their way down the Chena to the Tanana River and then continue their trek west?
Weather-wise, the last time I looked at the forecast, a lot of the area in Fairbanks and then west out to the first couple checkpoints, it was forecast to be during the day, highs a little bit below zero, single digits below zero, and overnight lows around 30 below or approaching 30 below. On top of that, there's been a lot of snow that's fallen in that area the last couple weeks. It's been a very snow-heavy winter. The last time I looked at the snow total on Friday afternoon, it was about 78 inches that it accumulated in Fairbanks, which is an exceptionally snowy year. I think it's been since about the winter in 92, 93 or thereabouts when they've had that much snow. What this means for the trail is that it's going to be soft. It's probably going to be slow. A lot of the mushers that I spoke with, that I think Ben spoke with at the ceremonial start on Saturday, were saying that they're really not sure what the trail is going to be like. You know, instead of the early parts of the normal route over the Alaska Range where there's really hard-packed trail, this is probably going to be slow, wide. There's some wind that people are sort of maybe expecting. They're kind of waiting to see how that plays out. There could be more snow that softens up and slows down the trail. So a lot of people are kind of holding off. And, you know, they know the different possibilities, but nobody sounded totally positive about what they're going to encounter. You know, I spoke with Jason Mackey, brother to, you know, past champion Lance Mackey, and he started training out of a new property he has in Nenana, which is one of the early checkpoints and has had pretty similar conditions to what we're going into. And he said the advantage to that was that his dogs, they are really prepared for what it sounds like people are going to encounter.
You know, the dogs are acclimated to them temperatures up there. As of last night, it was 35 below. We're used to that. We've got the best gear. We've got the best of everything for them conditions, which we've never had before. And, yeah, it's all good.
Do you know where you want a 24?
As far down the trail as I can get.
I spoke with Pete Kaiser, a musher out of Bethel, who raced this year in frigid temperatures on the Kuskokwim 300, you know, 45 below in Kalskeg and Aniak. I asked him about, you know, kind of the special considerations you have to take for dog care when the temperature is dropping, you know, down to 40, 50 below.
You got to be a little more on top of the type of food they're getting. Of course, they're burning more calories when it's colder, so you're trying to get more calories into the dogs and yourself, layering your clothes correctly so you're not too cold and you can take good care of the dogs. So coats on the dogs. It makes everything a little more difficult. Staying hydrated yourself, keeping the dogs hydrated. Those temperatures 30, 40, 50 below are always a little more tricky, but it looks like the forecast is showing that we might get some of that the first few days and then maybe a little bit of a warm-up towards the middle of next week.
And when things get down to 50 below, you know, sometimes the equipment doesn't work right. Sometimes the snaps will not be snapping correctly, and it slows down all of those tasks that sometimes you have to do 16 times for each of your dogs and adds a little friction to the system.
I remember in the 15 race hearing about, you know, what impact that those really just terribly cold temperatures were having on mushers. And I just remember a story, I think it must have been by Emily Schwing, about how the ointment that mushers, that Allie Zirkel was rubbing into her dog's paws was freezing or not behaving right. And that's just a level of kind of cold. You know, if you're trying to take care of your dogs and make sure their paws are healthy and strong and you're massaging ointment into them, imagine doing that at like 50 below.
The trail from Fairbanks does require some different strategies than the typical race route. Aside from that really cold weather, there's also some really long runs that teams don't really see elsewhere. Can we go over what exactly that trail looks like and what some of the strategies might look like?
In this year's race, we have 5 runs that are 80 miles or more between checkpoints. In the typical southern route, the longest runs are 80, 85 miles, like Ophir to Iditarod and Kaltag to Unalakleet, which is run every single year. But this year has some really long runs. You've got 119 miles from Tanana to Ruby. The second run of the race going from Nenana to Manly, that's 90 miles. That's after a run of 60 miles to Nenana. Up to Hooslea is 80 miles and back. A couple mushers described the first half of the trail as kind of the camping part of the trail, as they're going to break runs down to the exact size that they want to for their run schedule.
And Ben, what does that mean for somebody that is not familiar with mushing, especially long distance mushing? I mean, how is camping with a full team of sled dogs different from, you know, let's say pitching a tent at a beach in the summer?
Well, mushers prepare to be able to do all of their dog care out on an empty trail. So mushers will come with their cook stove, with an appropriate amount of straw and food, and just bed down, get that precious rest. They prefer to do it. Many prefer to do it in checkpoints with where there's water and amenities, but especially in races like the Yukon Quest, this is one way to make the run size exactly as long as you want it to be. If we look at the schedule from 2015, the front mushers were arriving, it'd be about 4 o'clock on Monday. That would be with a fast trail, and that it may be quite a bit different if it's a much slower trail this year. And the racers at the front reached Manly, that second checkpoint, around 4 a.m. Tuesday morning. I spoke a bit with Noah Burmeister, who lives in Nenana and knows these river miles backwards and forwards.
It'll be a freshly put in trail and soft, so it'll be slow going. But there's a lot of technical running between Nenana and Manly, going in and out of portages and through trees and tight corners and turns and everything else. And there could be some areas where there's overflow.
You know, I asked mushers about river miles today and sort of asking about the concept of if river miles are flat and boring and easy and fast. But there's many different variations of a river mile. There can be drifted snow. There can be no snow at all. The winds can be swift, like the Bering Sea coast. Or it could be a nice, fast trail, calm as can be, So there's no one definition of a river mile, and mushers are prepared for some mix depending on what that trail looks like come Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
I have a technical question. How long is a river mile?
It's between a nautical mile and a statutory mile.
Okay, so about a mile.
When I worked in Bethel, we would sometimes get calls from listeners if we described the distance between villages in air miles, when river miles is really the more correct term for boat and snow machine and dog team transportation.
Good to know. So do mushers know where they're going to take their rest along the trail, or do they just kind of wing it and figure it out as they go?
You're never going to get a musher to tell you exactly what their schedule is, what they plan to do. Although mushers do plan things out very well with an idealized schedule or several schedules, they'll set themselves up with several options to take their 24 in different spots or their 8 in different spots. But there are a few different ways to go. You can push further on your 24. You can take your 24 before your 8-hour rest. With this Yukon route, there's many more places to take that 8-hour and many different configurations that we could see.
And now, Zach, do you have anything to add on that?
The only thing that I would add to what Ben said about people being a little bit cagey or, you know, waiting and seeing where stuff is going to happen is that the variable weather that people are anticipating really is kind of having people build in multiple contingencies for what they're going to do. You know, if it's really slow and really long and really cold, that's going to affect how somebody chooses to rest their dogs and, you know, what speed they maintain them at and where they're taking their rest. So, Wade Mars actually told me a little bit about how he's trying to use the weather to figure out his overall strategy.
Out here, you know, it sounds like it's going to be really soft trails, a lot of wind, and we don't know if it's going to continue to be windy when we hit it or not, or if it's going to snow again and we're going to have even softer trails, or what's going to happen here. So it's pretty interesting.
Another person who's good at spelling this stuff out is Jeff King. King is smart. He's run a lot of races, and he has definitely thought about where to rest and where to push ahead. But even he sounded like he had a kind of we'll find out attitude toward the early stretches of the trail.
Well, you never really know until we find out if the conditions we run into are what we're expecting. Because determining your rest needs to be based on the conditions when you arrive. Now, I think I know what the conditions are, but I'm not sure.
Do you want to take a break and give a high five?
I do.
So here, King stepped away because his partner, Kristen Bacon, who's also running the Iditarod, drove by on her sled. King stepped away, gave her a high five, told her she was awesome, stepped back.
You know, I think I know what the trail's going to be like. I think I know what the weather's going to be like. But to keep a schedule without confirming that things are the way you expect them to be is really, in my opinion, a mistake and something some people mess up on. But I think I know, and I'll know more when I get out there, you know.
What can we expect to see next? Mushers will leave Fairbanks, pass through Nanana, then up toward Manly Hot Springs and Tanadaw. What are we likely to see over the next day until tomorrow's episode?
Well, the race is on to Nanana, then on to Manly Hot Springs, along the river to Tanana, joining up with the Yukon River. We're going to see mushers, some going far ahead, some sticking back, conserving rest in the sort of some of the colder days of the race, perhaps. We're going to see several strategies unfold across space and time.
And once the mushers are out of Fairbanks, where are you two going next?
We will be parting ways and then coming together and then parting and then coming together. Ben will be at the front of the pack, so he'll be keeping up with whomever is going wherever as long as they're in the first or second or third position. I'll be following along with the middle of the pack. My schedule is stick around Fairbanks on Wednesday. I head out to Ruby. From there, I'll be going to Galena, over to Kayakuk, eventually Caltag, over to Unalakleet, White Mountain, and then I'll make my way to Nome. Ben?
The major stops include Nanana, Manly Hot Springs, Tanana, Ruby. We'll hit Galena. And then one stop that I'm especially looking forward to is Hooslea. Only the second time ever that Hooslea has hosted the Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race. Then on down towards perhaps Nulato, Caltag, onto the coast. It's hard for me to think more than Nanana and Manly Hot Springs away, but on paper, mushers will be in Nome in about 8 days.
Well, and I think another important thing to include, if you care about our logistics at all, which I think besides our parents and Ben's grandma listening to this, there's probably a small audience, but Ben will be with a pilot. He'll be able to follow along and stop wherever the race takes them. That might be in between checkpoints. That might be switching up his schedule at a moment's notice. My schedule is a little bit more fixed. I'm a lot more boring. Ben's probably going to see some cool shelter cabins that I'm never going to get to go anywhere near.
Yeah, so it sounds like... Okay,
Josh, where are you going to be?
I'm probably going to be sitting in this exact chair. The chair might not even move. It is a swivel chair, though, so at least I've got that going for me.
Josh, what time are you going to be setting your alarm once we get into full tilt daily podcast mode?
Oh, I'm still trying to figure that out, but it's looking like the hour hand might still be on the two.
are you really... It's going to be... You're going to be doing like 2:30 wake-ups?
Yeah, it's looking like that. We've got a lot of stuff to get out here in the early morning hours. We have an Iditarod newscast. We've got this podcast, and then we've got all the regular newscasts that have to get done as well. So it's going to be a packed morning, and I thought my sleep schedule and my wake-up times normally were just terrible and terrifying. It's going to get even weirder.
If I ever find myself complaining about sleep, I try to remember that quite a few of these mushers make it from Fairbanks to Nome on, 5, 10, 15 hours of sleep. So I'm going to try to hold my thoughts on my sleep schedule.
And we do have a listener question I'd like to get to. It's somebody sent it in over the weekend from a tailgate party here in Anchorage.
My name is Caroline Wilson. I live in Anchorage, Alaska. What is the advantage of going in the middle of the pack in the numbering versus the early numbers and late numbers? Because earlier, Mitch Seavey said that he wanted to be in the middle.
There's a lot of if statements that come into play when you're trying to figure out where in the pack you want to be. If there's trail that has to be broken, you're probably not going to be way up front. On the other hand, if you want to be passing folks and there's a lot of snow on the trail and not a lot of options for easy passing, you maybe want to start earlier and just have more options to race at the front if your schedule determines that. Also, the terrain plays a role here in some places like the Happy River Steps and the Dalzell Gorge. If more racers are going to scrape off snow and eliminate your ability to slow down and control your sled the best that you can, you may want to be a little bit closer to the front to have more braking power. It's a million ifs in this situation.
And this was actually something that when we spoke at the ceremonial start, Jeff King mentioned about his early plans for his strategy.
I'll be less interested in being in the back of the pack the first 48 hours than maybe normal, because I really don't expect the passing to be good. And I think people will lose, in some cases, hour or two in poor passing conditions or getting stuck behind a slower team. And I don't want to be there.
That question did come from one of our listeners, so if you do have a question about the race, please send it our way. You can email them to iditarod@alaskapublic.org. Better yet, record yourself on a smartphone and email us. You can use a voice recorder or a memo app. Almost all phones have these. Introduce yourself, tell us where you're from, and just ask away.
I have a question.
Okay.
Since this is the last time the three of us are going to be here for the Iditarod, what are you guys most excited for?
I'm most excited to be in the checkpoint when we see a headlamp coming across the frozen trail, and I get to be there to see the first musher making their move in this year's race.
I am actually looking forward to the drama over the last couple of days of the race. The last several years, there's just been some crazy stuff that's gone down. Last year, Brent Sass had a lot of trouble getting out of White Mountain. It dropped him back from one of the race leaders, top two or three, back to 20th. And then a few years before that, 2 years before that, I think, you had Jeff King and Ali Zirkle between White Mountain and Safety get caught in a huge storm there on the Seward Peninsula, get all turned around. And it just goes to show that, in the last couple of days of the race, even just down to the last few hours of the race, you never really know what's going to happen. How about you, Zach?
I got that question from my wonderful girlfriend last night, because I was having a little bit of a freak out, and she just told me, what are you the most excited to actually do? Just try and focus on that. And it calmed me down. And I remember last year when I was out on the trail, there were a couple moments that I'll always remember for the rest of my life. And one of them was being in White Mountain on the last night of the race as the leaders were speeding towards Nome. And the top 10 finishers, a lot of them were all on the frozen Fish River and handling their dogs and exhausted. But, you know, White Mountain is a mandatory 8-hour hold. So, you know, people are exhausted and their minds are racing, but they're also about to get a little bit of rest. And everybody was really quiet, taking care of their dogs. The sun was pretty much set and the auroras came out. And just the opportunity to, you know, stand there and watch these people that are at the top of their game in this really kind of interesting and exhausted state in a really beautiful part of Alaska with the northern lights out overhead. I feel like, you know, aesthetics aside, those moments where you just get to sit back and experience something really deeply, and for a second the deadlines recede, the race recedes, the stress, the exhaustion, the hunger, the temperature, everything just sort of recedes, and it's almost like a hyper focus. And I'm really excited to get to go out and feel that again. I feel like the Iditarod in a lot of ways is the setting for this kind of presence. And one musher that I spoke with, Jody Bailey, today, I asked her, I said, you know, what are you planning on doing differently this year from last year in the race? And she said, I had a really hard race last year. Towards the end, I really tried to think of gratitude and really tried to just be grateful for where I was. And that's when it started to be fun. So I think this year I'm just going to try and practice more gratitude from the beginning. So I don't know. I'm looking forward to the same thing that Jody Bailey's looking forward to. I'm looking forward to having a lot of fun, some really cool places with a lot of sled dogs.
Well, that sounds like a pretty good place to leave it for today. Thanks to Zachariah Hughes from Alaska Public Media and to KNOM Radio's Ben Matheson for joining me. They're both heading out on the trail, so this is the last time we'll all be together in the studio for a while, but we will keep churning out those daily episodes. They'll be available each morning through the end of the race. Again, you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher or listen on alaskapublic.org. That way, you can listen every day until the race is done. Our theme music is by the band Sassafras, and I'm Josh Edge. Goodbye.
Yeah, I'll never forget that 2014 race, because when the news came that Ali Zirkel had passed Jeff King, who was the leader at that point, I was actually in the Polaris bar for the Wet Buns competition, and they were, you know, Iditarod is such a huge thing that people were, you know, announcing that in between contestants, and, you know, the crowd was reacting and everyone was really excited. And, you know, even though there was this weird, somewhat sordid competition of, you know, men disrobing in front of a very appreciative audience, the race was still the thing that people cared the most about. So.